I'd like to call the meeting. Well, I guess we're not calling it to order. We're just going to start. We're going to kick off this meeting. This is my first chairing of the Ways and Means. So thank you all for coming. I know that's why you're all here. but I'd also like to thank our past chairman, Rich Gerentine. He's been great in the transition, very helpful. He's always conducted very good meetings, and I hope to carry on in that way as well.
Thank you very much.
So we're going to go over the presentation, the findings from Eisner-Ampner. There is two presentations here. Since they came and visited with us in November, they are not here today. So what we have is their end product and recommendations for action. So if you want to start, do we want to turn the lights down a little?
I can do it right here.
Yeah. Okay, and these presentations will be made available at the end, but we'll kind of walk through everything with you now. Okay, I think it's really kind of important before we go through the actual decks to just context set what transpired and where we're at today. I want to review the findings, and then I want to do a brief overview of the process and what the outcome of this effort was. So we started this process back in September of last year. We hired Eisner-Ampner. Final contracts went out on October 6th and were signed. They began site visits November 5th, that couple days in there. Between November 13th and 16th, additional information was requested, hard drives were made available, and hard drives were shipped to California. On the 27th, we had the presentation to Ways and Means. There was a deadline set for questions from the legislator as a result of those presentations. Those questions were received and sent to Eisner on December 10th. We did not get a response on those questions. We had some preliminary reports sent back, but we did not get the questions answered until January 24th. And I think part of that was we were going through organizational changes here, and there was a lot happening. But once we got back on track and got back to them, they did forward their response to the questions. Those questions informed the final outcome of what you're going to see here. The chair had some discussions with them on the draft reports. Then the chairwoman, Rich, and myself met with them just so we had everything fine-tuned and we knew what we were presenting. And so what you're going to see today is the result of that effort. So I just wanted to give you the timeline so you have the timeline. Overview, we found that we were lacking a comprehensive IT policy. The one we had in place was from 1999, and while a new policy had been drafted, a security policy back in August, and a breach policy in October of last year, what we feel was valuable for this process is that there are key elements to the policy that are missing, and this review allowed us to identify those issues so we can add them and better define the policy as we move forward. Because of the lack of a comprehensive policy, we had unclear lines of authority, lack of understanding as to who had access to what, and no ongoing oversight to ensure that the policy was being adhered to. A policy is only as good as the monitoring you do to ensure that elements of that policy are enacted. So this review helped us to identify where we can improve, where we could make clear the county's policy so that in the future we have a guide so we're able to take action. So with that, if you'll start.
Lynn, can I just make a couple
comments? Sure, please.
Before we proceed, no matter what you hear or read about, this is not a political report. It wasn't the intent of being a political report. Unfortunately, it went a little bit beyond the time scope of that we as a legislative body had in mind, but I can assure everybody there's no politics involved in this, one way or the other. So I just want to make that very clear that that's not the intent of the legislators I have spoken to.
Good. Thank you, Rich.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. So again, just to talk about, you know, this gives you the overall timeline. We started this on the 15th when contracts were signed. Three areas that were to be analyzed was the access of the finance department shared folder. Did staff access files in the finance department shared folder? If so, which were accessed? The authorization of access. Through what channels did the controller's staff gain access to the folders? And when was access granted and by whom? Access of the controller's office folder. Did the IT department access files within the shared folder in the controller's office? If so, which files were accessed when and by which computer? So that gives you kind of the overview. The summary is based on their observations from computers and records that were provided to them. It assumes that all records provided were accurate and complete. The team interviewed representatives from the controller's office and the IS department. They analyzed some of the artifacts from the eight computers. They reviewed email, the Varonis log. They looked at portions of the IS support ticketing, which is the process by which you gain access to database. Specific details of the findings, they have some of those. But for the most part, the summary is access of the finance department shared folder. There were three computers assigned to two users were identified to have accessed the department, the finance department's folder between 2016 and 2018. And a list of the files accessed were identified by the investigation and have been archived. Authorization of access, the information services department appears to have provided access to at least one of the controller's users to the finance department shared folder on March 28th in 2016 in response to a support ticket submission related to the FinCom folder. And an analysis of the RONIS files access report of events related to the controller's shared and user shared shows that users from the IT department did access those locations between June 21st through 28th. Eight computers, five from controller's office, three from information services, were forensically imaged. Eisner compiled and analyzed selected artifacts from the contents of those imaged computers. Some of the things that they were looking at were recycled bin logs, link and jump files, internet history cache, deleted and active files, registry entries, and other log files. Their observation, the jump and link files from the three computers belonging to two users from the controller's office indicate files on the finance folder outside the FinComp folder were accessed between 2016 and 2018. All three computers referenced above had a registry mount which points directly to the finance folder. They also had registry entries showing a mapping to a T drive directly to the finance share. So two of the computers belonging to a user referenced had CMD files that, when executed, would create a map to the T drive for the finance directory. So they all had access and it was ongoing. Observations, the selected email between users were reviewed for relevance on August 8, 2016, an email referencing a ticket was sent by a user in the controller's office to the IS department because they could not access the controller's network share. The user from the controller's office emailed the message contained a screenshot of the mapped network drive showing the T was directly mapped to the finance folder. So there was no intent to hide anything. Everything was out there. Access of the finance department shared folder. The county information service department provided Eisner with the Varonis report for the time period May 7, 2018 through October 19 that detailed the filed activity and permission activity. These are a list of some of the observations of all the files that they looked at. There were a total out of 300,000 file-related events that were logged, a total of 12 events by three users from the controller's office. On May 9th, a user from the controller's office opened two files in the FinCom folder. And on May 9th, a user from the controller's office opened eight files that were in the finance folder, but outside the FinCom folder. On July 9th, a user from the controller's office attempted to open two files that were in the folder, but outside the FinComp, and the status shows has failed for both of those files. The County Information Service Department provided Eisner with a Varonis report for the time period of March 30th through July 26, 2018 that detailed file activity. A user from Information Services accessed 48 files on the controller's network share between the June 21st and the 25th and accessed 168 files on the controller's user shares as of June 28th, 2018. The ticketing database, Information Service Department queried their help desk ticketing system for all tickets for finance or treasury and provided those to Appner for Eisner-Appner for analysis, their observations. In 2010, a request from the finance department for a shared folder named FinComp was created, and numerous users in the controller's office were given read-only access. Numerous entries in the ticketing system requested read-only access to FinComp. No specific request was found for the finance folder. On March 28, 2016, a user in the controller's office reported they could not access the FinComp folder. IT user remoted to PC and checked with user, the FinComp folder is missing. IT user then created a new T drive for a map to COB1 finances. On the follow-up entry for the ticket by an IT user stated, folder was moved as a subfolder within the finance structure. Moved it back and recreated a share and folder permissions. Notified IT user who will follow up and followed up with the user, folder back in old location, okay to close. So again, you know, there was a paper trail on that. Link and jump files, these are just the definition of all the different files and the entry process, the mapping, and the batch files. So from that, it did highlight some opportunities of where we can tighten up our policies and procedures and ensure that we have the appropriate protocols in place for access to the system. So if we can go through the overall executive summary of their review of the policy, Ulster County retained them again to look at conduct an independent review of the county's current and draft information technology policies and procedures, including the IT security breach, current and draft, and the draft information for the security breach procedure, and a record retention and disposition policy. This review focused on the following objectives: whether the county's policies and procedures properly address the risks and oversight within the information security procedures and internal controls currently in place, and determine whether gaps exist within the current and draft policies as compared to industry best practice, and recommend appropriate enhancements. And that's what we've got here. They've looked at the current policy, which is the security policy, which was dated 1999, and then the Ulster County record retention policy, but it's not clear when the date on that policy. The draft policies, which is, you know, we found out what we found when we were going through this review. There's an IT security policy, which my understanding was drafted in August of 2018. And then the draft information security breach policy, which was put in or developed as of October 2018. So we looked at not just what existed at the time this all happened, but also what policies they were recommending to be put in place in draft form. The following reportable observations were identified as it related to the 1999 policy. During the review, it noted that the policy is very broad, covers only acceptable use, internet usage, voice, electronic mail. In other words, it didn't address all the things that we are grappling with today in today's technology world. It did note that the policy did indicate users, this language, users must engage in activities when using county IT system that will in any way discredit the county, are not engaged in any activities which would discredit the county service. Users who permit loss, corruption, or unauthorized use of sensitive information may have their access privileges terminated. County employee who who permits loss, corruption, or unauthorized use of sensitive information are subject to discipline up to and including termination. Records retention and the disposition schedule, based on the review, they had no observations of any missing components from that. They that would be something we'd have to take a look at. The following report observations were identified for the draft policies. The security policy. During the review, seven areas were identified for improvement. The policy excludes key procedures such as clean desk, email retention, hardware disposition, mobile device management, periodic user certification, social engineering awareness, and network monitoring and auditing. One observation noted a lack of data inventory, including data definition and data owners, who owns access and can provide privilege. Draft information on the security breach procedures during the review of that three areas were identified for improvement there. The policy currently excludes procedures surrounding breach containment, breach resolution, and defined roles and responsibilities. So in this report, they also went in and they started to say, let's rate the various components that are missing that we think are really important for the policy. And they've marked them, high. That's the potential for significant problems if we don't overhaul the policy and procedure for that particular function. And there's moderate and low. So if we go through, you'll start to see. with regards to the draft IT policy, because we said let's not focus on what's in place, let's focus on what they're proposing as going forward, because this is about how do we improve our security. Eisner Ampner determined that the policy addresses key areas for information security risk and controls, acceptable use policy, access control, third-party management, backups, recovery and replication procedures, mobile computing, electronic communication email policy, network monitoring and auditing, cloud computing, patch management, change management, and system development lifecycle. They felt the following areas could be added to address information security risks as follows. Email retention policy, procedures for the disposition of hardware, mobile device management software and security, social engineering awareness policy, a clean desk, clean screen policy, network auditing and monitoring, maintaining log files, doing a data inventory and identifying data owners, and we think this is critical to the access authorization matrix. Who has access to what, when, and who has the ability to authorize that. The current policy is vague. It's lacking many necessary key internal controls, such as the details related to the authorization of access. Through their review, they recognize that the drafted policies are much more detailed than the current, and they recommend that the county seriously consider in the short term addressing the gaps in the current proposed policy and implementing a new policy which would include the key internal controls. The controls would include but are not limited to authorization and monitoring of system access to critical applications and data. And then if we go into, they also provided us with templates which we'll have for the review process as well. On a high risk email retention policy, the current policy doesn't currently define IT policies and procedures. Maintaining emails indefinitely exposes the county to unnecessary risk from maintaining information that's no longer needed. Their recommendation is we should create an email retention policy to ensure email is destroyed within a reasonable time. Email is a communication platform and not serve as a data retention mechanism or control. Procedures for the disposition of hardware do not currently exist within the policy and procedures. This exposes the county to risk of giving unauthorized access to data unintentionally when disposing IT assets or repurposing IT assets to new employees. So their recommendation is to evaluate our process and determine what's appropriate approach to retiring or repurposing hardware. Generally speaking, hardware should be destroyed to ensure the data is not recoverable on the hardware before disposal. If hardware is being repurposed, storage devices should be wiped and re-imaged before reassigning to another employee. Mobile device management policy is not currently defined in the IT policy and procedures. Exposes the county risk of data loss when mobile devices are being used by employees. So their recommendation is to include a device management policy. The implementation of data encryption tools and mobile device management tools for mobile devices is critical for the security of data on mobile devices. Management does not currently include an authorization matrix defining data by category and assigning a data custodian or owner as the approver of access to the data. A lack of an authorization matrix in the policy exposes the county to risks of users obtaining access without proper approvals or potential unauthorized access by being granted by IT. Management should include this matrix in their policy, defining systems and data by category, by title, the appropriate individuals who should approve access to each system and the data, and it'll help to ensure that clear expectations are defined for IT to follow and when access is requested to a county system or to county data. Clean desk, this is a medium risk. Clean desk clear screen policy is not included, and it's, you know, again, a risk to the data exposure and data loss. Part of the policy design and documentation management should include procedures to maintain and reinforce clean desk, clean screen policy within the entity. A clean desk policy ensures employees are cognizant of securing sensitive data so that it is not located where someone can obtain unauthorized access. Social engineering awareness policy, we don't have one currently. Again, you know, we cannot identify a risk to the organization, or they could go undetected if we don't have a good policy in place. And they're recommending that we put one in. Social engineering policies help make employees aware of fraudulent social engineering attacks and procedures. And there, and my understanding is there's actually training out there on this so that you're helping people to understand when they're using these social media venues of how to protect or detect if something isn't proper. Network monitoring and auditing policies include language around maintaining adequate storage capacity, but it doesn't define the period of time audit logs should be maintained. This exposes the county to risk of not being able to investigate an incident fully if log files are not available. So again, consider defining a period for maintaining log files. Typically, management should maintain for at least the current fiscal year and consider longer periods if legal or regulatory requirements exist. And the last one here is the county currently does not define data custodians or owners of critical electronic data on the network and in key systems. Lack of defined data owners exposes the county to risk to, in the event of an incident, having no clear custodian. Management should consider documenting a data inventory of critical electronic data, including a data custodian for all that data. This can be incorporated into the IT policies and procedures or in the incident response plan. As it relates to the draft information security breach procedures, they determine that overall addresses key areas for information security, like breach response, notification of affected parties, identification of types of data. Though the policy addresses key areas of breach response and notification, some areas typically included in an incident response plan could be added to enhance the document's purpose, which is breach containment, resolution, and then definition of roles and responsibilities. As it relates to these policies, the information security containment is not as defined as they would like. They're recommending to include the breach containment procedures, and they should be included in testing of the plan and should be updated accordingly after tests and actual incidents to incorporate lessons learned when things happen. The information breach procedure does not include a resolution procedures. Again, that puts the county at risk due to not having a defined plan in place following an event or an incident. Management should update the security breach procedures to include resolution procedures. And the procedures may not address all incidents, but being updated and being able to update after an incident ensures that we're learning as things happen as well. The information security breach procedure does not include defined roles and responsibilities, which exposes not having the proper people addressing the proper components of the procedures. So their recommendation is to put that in place, and roles include but are not limited to employees, the system users, key personnel for reporting incidents, key vendors, and just being aware from a PR perspective. Again, they mentioned that they looked at the records retention, which is basically part of an overall state plan. It included all the key elements that are required by the state, and they had no additional information. So that final observation, final observation. One of the things that they said, if we take the three-prong approach and really think about our first line of defense as being management controls, internal controls and measures, second line of defense is, you know, management review of the controls, risk management, your compliance folks, so that we're always looking at what we put in place and ensuring that it's updated and current. And then the third line of defense is an internal audit process. So some of these things get looked at when departments are being audited, and that was their recommendation. They gave us a number of other templates and additional information. One of the things that we had talked about was since IT sits under the Economic Development Standing Committee, that we would work to hand off to them in conjunction with the IT department in fine-tuning the policy and incorporating some of the recommendations that came out of this effort. And yes, Kath?
This report and these observations seem helpful. I'm concerned that many of the questions that I submitted and raised to be addressed by the report, no changes seem to have been incorporated. And there are two things in particular that I would like to point out. One is that the time period that Eisner-Amper studied, they found 12 instances of encroachment by the comptroller's office into the financial records that they previously had not had access to. In the time period that of the Joe DeLeon's report, which was prior to that, there were over 450 instances of those use of data that prior to 2016 had not been available. And so that's the second point. Although Eisner-Amper correctly points out that there was not a formal policy of data ownership that would have clarified some of this in that first, second, third line, the records up until 2016 showing that the comptroller's office went to IT and asked for permissions to access FinComp, the final documents, shows that there was a process in place that everybody was following for years. Those tickets go back. And in 2016, something changed. I think the comment that it was done, you know, openly, it doesn't really work for me. Although there was a ticketed reference, that was not a document that was then sent to somebody to show that there was a new structure for access. And so I think there was a policy that was not a well-documented policy that operated up until that 2016 time. And after that opening of that previously inaccessible file, three members of the comptroller's office access to it repeatedly in large numbers that are not reflected in this document. So I would like the questions that I submitted to be attached to the report that it comes out on this, so that people who would like to look at the concerns that I raised can see those. And I commend the member of the comptroller's office. There was one who did not access any of these now open files, but instead continued to use the thin comp file that had previously been assigned as the place for the comptroller's office to obtain its information. Finished product, not work product. And I would encourage us to make sure that when we set up these policies or approve policies that are proposed from IT, that we acknowledge the comptroller's right to review finished documents but not work product, and that those ownership, data ownership assignments reflect that an office needs to be able to work and have internal work product that isn't being reviewed constantly, that it could lead to a lot of confusion if it's taken to be data when it's actually numbers in process of becoming data. That is, something that gives meaningful information. And what goes to, and as I understand it from every other arena in which I work, what goes to a CPA or an auditor is the final books. And that's what I would encourage us to set up here.
Well, the whole point here is that we did find that our policy that was in place even back then, even up until the incident, was the 1999, and it lacked the appropriate controls and process and ensuring that there were authorization access. So yes, we saw ticketeds, and we people were authorized. They were given permission and given access. And so to say that they weren't, it's not true. They were given access. But conversely, ITAs access as well. And so the whole point here is to be really clear about what we're giving people access to, and to the point you made, what information should someone have, and by creating the authorization matrix, ensuring that owners of the data are well aware of who they're giving access what to, will help us to avoid any problems and issues in the future.
Lynn?
Yep.
Just a question. Kathy, you did submit stuff?
Yes.
Why wouldn't that have included it to Eisner?
I mean,
my understanding that I asked every legislator if they had concerns, submit them through a process that you were the focal point going back to Eisner. So if there was something
Legislator
brought up,
Nolan's questions were forwarded included to AMPR.
And nothing transpired?
They were among those that we reviewed. They were among those that Eisner responded to.
Right.
Well,
yeah.
Okay, but they weren't noted. That's what they were her questions.
They were deemed out of scope.
Okay.
Who set that scope?
Eisner. I mean, that's in the Schedule A. The scope was set in the Schedule A initially.
And we had some questions about what was in their scope and not scope. So when we had that conversation, there was some discussion, was it included, was it not included? And to get to our other questions, we put the ones that were out of scope. We got all the answers to the ones that were supposedly in scope. And then when we went back, they said that they were content. The report was final. They were just going to do some various things of giving us policies, and they were ceasing what they were doing unless we paid additional fees.
Yeah, I mean, I think if it's appropriate, I can say that to the question that you raised just moments ago as to the timeline that was looked into, that timeline, they had asked, Eisner, AMPR had asked to look at a full year. Essentially, and that timeline was determined by IS. IS said, no, this is the timeline you're going to look at. And so the timeline that was reviewed was determined by IS.
So something that makes a little sense out of that is that Joe DeLeon, as the head of IS, had already provided a 56-page document for the time period prior to the period addressed in this document. And so it makes some sense that if you already had a report, then you would move forward to an area that hadn't been investigated previously. However, by just reporting what Eisner and Amtner looked at, as I said, their time period showed 12 encroachments from the comptroller's office to a previously restricted area. The De Leon report shows over 450. He didn't count them up, I did. But he provided the Veronis report, which shows those encroachments, and that's where I counted them from. If you want to get a full picture of what was happening, I think it's fair to include both reports. And I did ask the consultants if they had found anything in Joe De Leon's report that they thought was inaccurate, and they said no. So presenting just their
report. I don't know who you spoke to.
I spoke here when we had them on the speakerphone, and we had some of the members here, and I asked that question publicly in that, well, it was not public because it was in executive session. But now that you're putting out a report that does not include either my questions or the report that I based my understanding of the situation on, and that I think Eisner Amtner did too,
they
from
did
what
not.
I can tell.
And Jay can speak to that. I wasn't involved in the initial discussions, but I do know that Eisner Amtner was not asked to look at Joe De Leon's report. They did not review. They committed to an independent review. So they were not looking at a review that was executed by one department in this county. And that was very clear to me. Jay, you can tell me if I'm wrong about that.
Well, I agree with the conclusion there, but that's that they didn't look at the...
It was not part of their forensic analysis.
It wasn't part of
their forensic
what
analysis.
They were doing to review that and comment on it. I get that. But when I did ask that question, and they did say yes, and that they had not found any errors. They didn't look at it for that purpose. But this report without that report, I think, is less than half the story.
Well, I think the conclusion is what we're focusing on how to move forward and ensure we have policies in place that are actionable. We don't have policies in place today under the current old 1999 policy that are actionable. So we have an opportunity to put in the policies that are going to protect data, going to be very clear about roles and responsibility, and that's what I think is important to move forward with.
All right.
And we have good data to do that.
So you're saying we should focus on the policies and procedures aspect of the Eisner-Amper report rather than the other
components there. Informed what was missing in our current policy to really ensure that those things don't happen. So we've identified the problem. Now we're trying to, we're putting the solution in place, and that's what we're focusing on.
Okay, so we have
a quorum. Hello, Mr. Maloney. Okay, so resolution number.
Want to introduce David?
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. Just for everyone. David Gordon is the new legislative lead attorney. Okay. And Chris Ragucci will be second. Thank you. Welcome, David.
Thank you.
Okay. Approval.
Lynn?
Yes.
And Nick?
Oh, no. Sorry, Nick.
Sorry.
There's Nick.
You need the table for the minority caucus.
Yes. Welcome, Nick. Glad to have you back.
I'm still in the room.
Okay. Approval of the minutes of the, is there a motion to take approve the minutes of December 3rd meeting, the special meeting on December 11th, and the regular meeting on the 18th?
I'll move.
A second.
Second. Okay. So moved. No, now we vote. All in favor. I'll get the hang of this. This is my first one, you guys. Okay, all in favor.
Right.
Okay. We made those changes, right? Yeah. Okay. All right, yes. Resolution number 21, approving the execution of a contract in excess of, I don't have the actual I don't have my packet because my iPad died, so I need a packet. Sorry. Excuse me just one second. My iPad died and all my notes, everything is on the iPad. Of course, it's the first day.
So my
first meeting.
Borrowing somebody else's.
All right, let me, yes. Approving resolution number one, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Gotham Refining Chemical Corp. Department of Public Works. Do I have a motion?
I'll move.
Second?
I'll second. I might have one here, too.
Any questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Gotta use this. Oh, I think I got it. Thank you, though. Oh, my God. This is the whole packet. Yeah. No.
Do you want
yes.
mine?
Well, just the
other. I think I have. Is this the, this is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Never mind. I think
I
got it.
If you want that, right you can have
Thank
those.
You. Sure. Thank you, dear. Okay. Resolution. Well, it's not the right one.
22. Go ahead and use this.
Okay.
Use that. Use my computer for me.
For some reason, I'm not getting it. Okay. Resolution 22, approving the execution of a contract. We do 65 first. Sorry. Resolution 65, amending the 2019-2024 capital improvement program, establishing capital project number 533 Maltby Hollow Bridge, Town of Olive, amending the 2019 capital fund budget, Department of Public Works.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Dennis, any insight on this one?
Mm-hmm. Public Works.
Okay.
Public Works.
Oh,
yeah.
Public Works. Sorry. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution 22, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Cornell Cooperative Extension of Ulster County Department of Public Works.
Move it.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 23, approval, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Greenman Pedersen Inc., Department of Public Works.
Move it.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 24, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Callahan Industries, Inc., Department of Public Works.
Move it.
Second?
I'll second it.
May I ask a quick question on this? We don't have, I think this one and the next four or five are all for road work.
Yes.
And we have no dollar amounts here.
Right.
We do have what was spent
rates.
Last year.
Yep.
So you did provide that. We appreciate
and
that.
Thank you.
So that's you've got about. Are you doing the same number of roads? Are we anticipating the same cost?
The contracts are going to be different. I mean, the reason we didn't put numbers in each contract is there will be different processes that when we're all through with the winter, we'll know whether we need to do in, you know, place paving or hot recycled. So, and the CHIPS funding comes out like in 2 months. So it'll depend on that partially.
So depending on getting the CHIPS funding and whether or not you'll go forward with
certain.
Do we have a list of what roads you're targeting?
We're developing that right now.
So. Okay, so you don't have one.
It depends on the winter season, how bad some of the roads get hit.
I see. So you're still in the assessment mode.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, great. All right, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 25, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County A. Coloroso and Sons, Inc., Department of Public Works.
All good.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 26, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Gorman Brothers, Inc., Department of Public Works.
Move it.
Move?
I'll move it.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Gorman Brothers, Inc., Department of Public Works. This is for cold in place.
Move it.
Second? All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 28, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Peckman Road Corp., Department of Public Works.
Move it.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 29, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Catholic Charities of Orange, Sullivan, and Ulster, Department of Social Services. Move.
I'll second for discussion.
For discussion, Trace.
So, the original contract is $49,000 for this year, and then it's an additional $227,000.
Right.
Can you talk me through the increase and how we're going to define the cost?
Sure.
Because even as I read through the schedule, I didn't fully understand what basis we're going to be charged.
So it wasn't just for this year. We established the contract on a kind of an emergency basis,
mm-hmm.
because it got colder and we had to open it up right before Thanksgiving, so we needed to get a contract in place.
And we had to relocate.
And we had lost our previous
We had to relocate.
Oh, so the 49 was for a short window.
Just to cover
for a short window
purpose.
To cover the emergency, and then we came back to you when we needed and had the entire kind of amount worked out for the multiple years.
This,
so
for,
this
wait,
is
for multiple
one
years?
Year.
This all says 1 year.
Yeah.
I will say with this contract, we should get reimbursed for most of this. A lot of this is passed through money, so
mm-hmm.
we're going to get reimbursed for most of this money.
So it says up to, so they could, depending on the number of people that come through, they could spend less, but
Ken Cornell, I know, is not here. He mentioned how we had 15 people.
Right.
On a kind of continuous basis. Recently with the cold, so
okay.
they wanted to pass that along.
Okay.
Which is up, I think, from previous years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what are we being billed based on? I mean, I obviously think it's of critical importance that we have a warming center, but what this $227,000, what...
If it's daily.
Yeah, because the schedule
is... It's not clear.
Yeah, it's not clear.
I can get back to
can
you.
Can we hold it until next week just to discuss?
Yeah, I can definitely get that answer as to what...
yeah, because it just says it's going to operate
it,
but it doesn't say anything about...
okay,
I mean, they're providing meals, they're providing...
Yeah,
but I think
and blankets.
I know previously it was like the days open had a value to it, so
right.
in terms of each day.
Right.
So
all right, why don't we hold this one till next week?
Okay.
Formal motion to postpone?
Yes. Formal. Thank you.
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Your
to postpone.
No, I'm asking.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
We'll get that answer.
You make more.
Resolution 31, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County SUNY New Paltz Student Association, Ulster County Area Transit, UCAP. Motion to move?
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
All right. You want to go back to 30.
Back 30.
Oh, I'm you sorry. Did I miss 30?
Yeah. That's okay.
I did. Thank you. Approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Family of Woodstock, Inc., Department of Social Services. Move?
Move it.
Second?
I just have a question. I don't know if you know the answer, Bert. So it's increasing the total amount, but it's a retroactive increase. Is that so it's real cost?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's bills outstanding waiting for this
okay.
approval contract.
Thanks.
We did 31. Now we're
right,
at 32.
Vote on it.
Did we vote on 30?
No.
Oh.
No, we didn't vote on.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We did 31. We voted on it. Okay. Resolution 32, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Trapeze Software Group, Inc., Department of Information Services. Moved?
Moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
So moved. Resolution number 33, approving the execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 entered into by the County Martinelli Holdings, LLC, DBA, Today Media, Department of Tourism. Move.
I'll move. I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Motion passed. Resolution number 34, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Litzen Healthcare, Inc., DBA, WillCare, Office for the Aging. Move.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 35, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Family Home Healthcare, Inc., Office for the Aging. Move.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 36, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Unlimited Care, Inc., Office for the Aging.
Move it.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution 37, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, A&T Healthcare, LLC, Office for the Aging. Move.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 38, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county, Health Alliance Hospital, Broadway Campus, Office for the Aging. Move.
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 39, amending the 2019 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of funds from the National Center on Child Abuse and Neglect to enhance the Family Assessment Response Program, Department of Social Services. Move.
Move.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 40, amending the 2019 Ulster County budget to accept an additional allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services to continue Safe Harbor programming, Department of Social Services.
A second.
All in favor? Okay. Resolution number 41, amending the 2019 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of bonus funds from the New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance to enhance the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, Department of Social Services.
I'm moving.
We know this.
Yeah. How'd we get that?
Yeah. We know the guy that runs
there
that.
There you go. We do now.
This was before he...
I got that, Ken.
And I don't think it's a lot of fun.
Let's see. We'll have to get more.
There you go.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution number 42, authorization... Authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Department of Health to continue the rabies program, Department of Health.
Move it.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor? Resolution number 44, amending the 2019 Ulster County budget to accept increased funding from the New York State Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services for a minimum wage cost of living adjustment. Department of Mental Health. Move.
Move it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 45, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse Services, Department of Health.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 46, amending the 2019 Ulster County budget to accept increased funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health for a minimum wage adjustment, Department of Health.
Move it.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 47, amendment to the 2019 Ulster County budget to accept increased funding from New York State Office of Mental Health for Gateway Community Industries, Inc., Department of Mental Health. Move.
Bless you. Move. Second.
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 You can't do both, Rich. Do we have a second?
I second.
Okay.
It.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Use a different voice next time.
Resolution number 54. Authorizing the county executive and chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an amendment to the memorandum of agreement with the City of New York to accept grant funding for the Ashokan Rail Trail for construction of public trailheads, Department of Planning. Move.
So moved.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 55. Issuing determination and findings pursuant to eminent domain procedure law for the Kingston Rail Trail, PIN 8758.04, in the Town of Hurley, Town of Ulster, and City of Kingston, Department of Planning.
So moved.
Second. Trace?
Chris White's here. Can we ask Chris to give a little background on this? Just, I think it'll help moving forward.
So this is for the project to connect the O&W Hurley Rail Trail to the City of Kingston via a new 1.8-mile asphalt paved trail. It's along the former Ontario and Western, or O&W, corridor that has been used as a public trail, informally so, but has been a public trail since 1993. The county put together a project some years ago and received federal and state funding to build the trail and to formalize the informal use agreements into a right-of-way. We have now completed design. We have done seeker reviews. We have right-of-way authorization from the New York State Department of DOT of Transportation. And we have negotiated agreements with two of the three landowners thus far. The largest landowner is Central Hudson, and they have agreed to donate an easement worth over $60,000. And they've worked really well with us to try to locate their poles out of the way of the future trail. Adirondack Transit Lines is the second property. We have negotiated an easement to buy a small permanent easement from them. We had been trying to negotiate with Ulster Savings Bank since last August. Ulster Savings Bank had for many years represented that it was supportive of the trail and it would donate the easement, and then they never responded to any of our requests. They have since sold the easement in the last 2 weeks to another entity. So we have now made an offer of just compensation to them for the value of that, which we appraised at $24,000. The resolution that you are doing is necessary for federal projects when we can't certify that the easements are de minimis, meaning that they're below 10% of the lot size or below a certain acreage threshold. We did this back in 2016 with the Hudson Valley Rail Trail on the four easements that we were doing there. And the reason that you do the eminent domain is if at the end of your negotiations you can't get there, it gives you additional leverage to be able to finish your federal project.
Thank you.
Yeah. Chris, why are you? Why did Ulster have a change of heart?
Well, the same question, Richard, was asked at the economic development meeting. And I can't get in Ulster Savings Bank's mind, but what we believe occurred, and these are the facts, they had signed an agreement to sell this property and a property that was, it's proposed for 60 senior housing units right along the Esopus Creek, and this is an access to it. They had not closed since January of 2017 when they signed that initial agreement, and I believe that they've been going back and forth with this development company about whether they would close or not. And I think having the county kind of pushing to get this property allowed them to force the contract vendee, Hudson Valley Housing Development Fund, to finally close on the property. And you may also know that Hudson Valley Housing Fund has requested an easement from us across the UND. And when we brought that to the legislature last February, we had trouble even getting, you need 16 votes to give an easement like that. And we only had 14 votes just simply to set up the public hearing. There was some opposition to that. So that entity is trying to use their leverage on the O&W to get an easement across the UND. And they recently sent a letter to Chairwoman Archer that was copied to the chair of the legislature as well. And I don't know if you received or not the letter I sent
to
Vicki, but we had gotten in writing from the New York State DOT, a very clear reiteration of their opinion that we should not be trading easements because it is not a clean value for value proposition, and it could cause a loss of our federal funding, which is over $2 million.
And you're still in negotiation with them, correct?
We will be in negotiations till the last possible minute.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Chris.
And I would just say, as a good faith effort, we know that they want three things. Mm-hmm. They want access across the ONW. They want access along the ONW for emergency vehicles when they build this. We're amenable to both of those conditions. They don't interfere with the trail. In fact, we're helping their development by actually building that out.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing, though, I've been told not to link that UND corridor easement to this by the funding source. And additionally, I don't believe that there's the appetite in the legislature to do that mm-hmm. at this moment. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that you might not want to consider it in the future, but I wouldn't do it as part of this deal.
Okay. And you'll keep us posted on that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And we are trying to get to construction this year.
Okay. Resolution number... did we vote on that? Okay, sorry. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 56, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Transportation to accept New York State funds for Ulster and Dutchess County Public Transit Service Link, Department of Public Transportation, Ulster County Area Transit. Move. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 57, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an amendment to a license agreement with the Ulster County Agriculture Society, Inc., granting it the use of the Ulster County Fairgrounds for an additional term of 1 year, Department of Public Works, Building and Ground. Moved?
Oh. I'll second for discussion.
Discussion?
So I want to thank Deputy Executive Ryder for making those changes to the contract. I had reached out before the Public Works Committee requesting that the contract reflect the requirement to adequately recycle and provide recycling containers, and also that any vendor follow our county laws, which should be self-evident, but just to actually put it in the contract as it relates to plastic bags and polystyrene foam. And I just also wanted to mention that we're expecting to have discussions about moving forward with a 5-year contract, but that's going to take a little bit longer and involve a little more input.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
We voted.
No.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution number 58, amending capital project number 390, Sundown Bridge Replacement, Department of Public Works, Highway and Bridges. Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 60, amending capital projects number 392, 394, 396, and 397, HVAC weatherization project, various county buildings, Department of Public Works. Move.
Second.
I do have a question on this. I noticed in the capital projects it's not broken down by which... I mean, this helped, but what other buildings are included in that? Because I don't think you have, you had $1 million in there on the line, so you're not expending all that, or is there some others coming down the pike?
If you go into the finance system, Amber can get it for you, they're all listed out in project accounting.
Okay.
Do you have the building? Well,
I mean, so I have the list here of the four, but all the project numbers are in there?
Okay.
I'm sorry?
That's the list.
Oh, okay. And so you're going to, this is just the first group?
This is actually the last group right now. Right?
Oh, okay. So you're not going to be spending the full $1 million that you have allocated in the capital plan?
Well, part of it is, for what do you mean? I'm sorry.
I thought as it related to this particular these particular numbers, which is why I couldn't tell. It just has got them all lumped together, and mm-hmm. it had for this year $1 million, and you're at 8 and change.
Yeah, we're just using the A and J trail.
Okay, that was my question. Okay, thank you. Yep.
So I have a question. So we have the four projects, 392, 394, 396, and 397, which looks like they were established in 2015, correct?
Yes.
So my question is this last, the last resolve that allows the Commissioner of Finance to authorize necessary budget transfers between projects. I'm not used to seeing, I mean, we establish a capital project with a budget.
Yeah.
So what's...
I can address a couple of things. I'll let Bill use the ground. In terms of, from the finance perspective, at one point we used to do one project called various county buildings.
Right.
What I had asked, buildings, grounds, and highway, per se, same thing with the bridge one, which is next, break them out so that way we can track the expenses in each one of those. So at one point we had one project for $1 million.
One amount.
And it was for six different buildings. So what this essentially is doing is considering it one project, but I need it in terms of it spread out in terms of financial system, so that way I can track each project.
It gives us the ability to track how much is spending in each building, because each building is now a project.
So let me ask for a clarification. So Resolution 316, that was dated August 18, 2015, was that, for various...
Yes. No, it was like this one. It was mirrored this one. This is years and years ago. We used to do one capital project for various county buildings, one capital project for the bridge program, and... in terms of, we've gone forward and broke these out by project.
Does the bid that goes out cover multiple buildings, or is it a per building bid?
It depends, because
if we go out per building, typically, depending on what equipment fails, we'll go out to bid for that equipment.
So some of this probably is money that's used in the house labor as well. So it's not all just bid.
But given that we go out to bid, why are I'm a little confused. I feel there are two resolutions in this packet that are like this. This one is the more problematic to me, because the other one I get, and we're going to get to it, but with the multiple bridges that are, it's in-house, I understand that. This one, if we're going out for multiple bids, why are we...
If they go over budget, yes. I mean, in terms of that clause out, they'd come back to you and ask. There could be a timing part with the project.
But
I can't answer.
But authorizing this, it's not exactly the case. One of them could go over budget...
But
by $700,000
in a total project.
The total number
can't
exceed.
We're not going to bid the entire, each project. It'll be a portion, like an HVAC breaks down. That might be a contract if we need to do other weatherization, or we need to just buy something that's part of this, because materials is also part of these projects.
Right.
So that is where we would move money through project to project. We're not bidding all of this. Some of it's just we're installing materials using in-house labor as well.
And then you're saying you do a final accounting per project?
Absolutely.
Well, the whole time it's per project.
Could there be an overage on one so great that you not do one?
First of all, the system won't let me go
over
the project.
Well, if you were allowed to move money around, you can.
Correct. But again, it's coming from one project to another. It's not coming from an outside source. It's between those projects.
So to answer your question, theoretically, yes. I mean, but I don't see that ever happening, where we would overspend
stop
on one and then not do the other project.
Mm-hmm. Because one was more than you anticipate and you're only approved to a certain amount.
Yeah, and if that was the case, too,
you'd
and it was
back.
Something that was bid out on a contract, we'd have to amend that contract, so we'd have to come back to you at that time. We wouldn't just be able to do that. I think that this language has been in since 2015, this resolve.
I think that was one of
and
the
not,
first resolutions.
I mean, that,
again, I say prior, we used to, I mean, years ago, it was just one project for various county buildings, and we'd broken that out.
Kathy, there was a point that came out in the discussion of the bridges that was helpful to me, which is that, and it's more clean on the bridges because it's all in-house labor, but on a project that you're bidding out, you typically have contingency built in, and it can be 20%. When we're doing them in-house, we don't put that in, and so having a little bit of flux between three projects prevents those timing delays. In this case, there are also projects that will be partially done with in-house, and so that you by having the projects combined together, and having a little bit of ability to move between, you basically get a contingency but have a cap on the projects as a group.
I guess my concern is that don't we, on the individual projects, don't we have, are you suggesting that we don't have contingency in the bid? I mean,
the bridge project.
No, I'm not talking about the bridge.
If they're bid, but again, a lot of this is for materials, so it's not all just, it's in-house. It's not, it's
not all just. So 60 is in-house with materials.
What's that?
Is that what you're saying?
It can include a few.
392, yeah. Capital Project 392, which is just a building. I don't know.
Yeah,
you have the list. You have the list, so I could look it up. But I mean, whatever building that is.
Oh, it's on here.
Yeah.
The courthouse.
Okay,
courthouse.
So the courthouse, we may do some of that 102,000 in-house. That I, it's right there on the list what we're actually doing. But
I believe there's windows on that one. There's
windows, cooling tower, heat pumps. Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of things we can
right.
Pull off of.
And those could be separate bids.
And this allows you to look at each of, by having a separate number for mm-hmm. each. It would be helpful in the capital plan if you could list out the numbers and what buildings they represent. That would be helpful.
We don't do that. No, we listed. Okay. I think it's
it's lumped together.
Same thing
it's
like
just,
the bridge program too.
Yeah, yeah. Until it comes mm-hmm. before us, we're not quite sure. So that could be helpful. And while we're on the capital project, if in the index, if there's a number assigned, if you could start a column that shows the mm-hmm. capital project sure. number, so it'd be easier to reference when mm-hmm. we're using that. Okay. So thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. We have motions. Pardon me?
All in favor?
All in favor, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Trace?
Yeah, okay. Maybe we could get this kind of level of detail normally included.
Backup?
Yeah, it's backup.
That would be helpful. Resolution number 62, conveying parcel of county-owned real property acquired through capital project number 501 to the town of Lloyd, Department of Public Works. Move?
Move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Excellent. Resolution number 63, establishing capital projects number 530 through 532, 2019 DPW Bridge Program, Highways and Bridges, Department of Public Works. Move.
Move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Resolution number 65, amending the 2019-2024.
Sure, we did that one.
We did that. Oh, that's right, 65. We did do that. Thank you. Resolution number 68, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute execute an agreement with the New York State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services, Office of Interoperable and Emergency Communications for the 2018 Statewide Interoperable Communications Grant, Department of Emergency Communications and Emergency Management. Moved?
Second.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 69, amending capital project number 482, countywide radio system, Department of Emergency Communications, Emergency Management. Move.
Second. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 71, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, NYSERDA, to accept incentive funds through the Charge Ready New York program, Department of the Environment. Move.
Move.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 72, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York Power Authority for Energy Services, Department of the Environment.
Move.
Second.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 73, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a multi-jurisdictional payment in lieu of taxes agreement with ELP Saugerty Solar LLC, the County of Ulster, the Town of Saugerties, and the Saugerties Central School District for solar energy systems pursuant to real property tax law, section 487. Move.
Move it.
Second.
Second.
All in favor? Resolution number 74, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a payment in lieu of taxes agreement with Frog Hollow Solar LLC for solar energy systems pursuant to real property tax law section 487. Motion?
Move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 75, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to enter into agreements with the villages of Ellenville, New Paltz, and Saugerties relating to the enforcement of real property tax liens under Article 11, Sections 1102, 1110, 1150 of the New York State Real Property Tax Law, Department of Finance.
Move.
Second. Any questions?
No, but
all in favor?
Aye.
Resolution number 76, authorizing the Commissioner of Finance to sell real property acquired by court order pursuant to Article 11 of New York State Real Property Law, Department of Finance. Move.
Move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor? Resolution number 77, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement for the sharing of information relating to short-term rental properties with the Town of Shandaken, Department of Finance.
Move it.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
So moved. They got through this. Any new business? Any old business? Make a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.